A friend will not eat pork. He grew up in an Islamic culture where pork was considered unclean. Though he no longer practices the religion of his childhood, he still does not eat pork. He knows about the history of food taboos and that millions of people eat pork with no harmful effects. Still, for him, for reasons he cannot articulate, pork is unclean. In heart-attacked New Zealand, the taboos of his childhood are worth reconsidering. Concerns about trichinella have given way to concerns about cholesterol. Maybe the old myths were wise myths. However, in our sane, demythologized society, matters of the heart are matters best ignored. We seem to value being free from ideas that restrict us in order to be enslaved by things that consume us. The problem is bigger than past practices and pigs. It's not so much about what we consume, but consumption itself. Western society has made appetite an art form, extolling voracity and indulgence. We have a cake that we believe we have made, and therefore we rightly deserve to eat. Often we share the odd slice or two. We feel sorry for those who miss out. We get fat, others starve, and our heart suffers. In the presence of such collective ravenous appetite, it's not surprising that some are labeled insane. Those who criticize the consumption of the Western world, those who refuse to join, those who embrace counter values are suspect. Like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, we need daringly to ask, who are the insane? Not surprisingly, Jesus' family thought him mad. Being told you're mad in a mind-eating, control-fixated, rapacious world is no insult. In Luke 8:26, Jesus is in the territory of Gerasa. There he meets a disheveled individual with a bad case of demons. The man shouts impolitely. Jesus tells the nasties to get lost, Exorcism 101. The nasties debate the point. They wanted to go and torment some poor swine. Jesus agreed. The demons possessed the pigs, which then did the lemming thing into the lake. Here's a riddle. What do demons, pigs, and Romans have in common? There are deliberate puns in the story that link the three together. It was Roman soldiers, the foreign army, who brutally controlled and consumed Palestine. At Gerasa, the Romans had killed 1,000 young men, plundered and burnt the town. No wonder the locals were frightened. The location of the story is no accident. Neither is the name of the demons, Legion. Legion had only one meaning in the first century, a division of Roman soldiers. Indeed, the whole story is filled with military imagery. The term used for herd, inappropriate for pigs who don't travel in herds, was used to refer to a band of military recruits. The phrase, he gave them permission, connotes a military command, and the word for pigs rushing into the lake suggests troops rushing into battle. Enemy soldiers being consumed by waters, of course, brings to mind the saga of Israel's liberation from Egypt. The story also has an inescapable theme of impurity. In Jewish culture, graveyards were places of defilement. Among the tombs was a fitting place for a demoniac. Likewise, the absence of clothes was not a lifestyle choice. Those who were deprived of their liberty, for example, prisoners, lost the right to wear clothes. Nakedness itself was a sign of being ritually unclean. Romans, as non-Jews, were considered unclean and impure. And of course, the pigs, always suckers for bad press, were part of this impure package. I feel for those pigs. Those little swine got a bad deal. They weren't even consulted. Pigs still today are continually being put down, and not just by the creators of Kermit. Pigs are stigmatized as unclean and having disgusting trough manners. Their name is used as a derogatory label. It's not only that inconsiderate driver who gets called a swine, but also police officers and military personnel, particularly when working in a hostile environment. Even in Jesus' Palestine, pigs were used to symbolize Roman religion and Roman rule. So the riddle. What do demons, pigs, and Romans have in common? Well, they're all impure in a Jewish sense. In another sense, some would call them all swine. But more than that, they all consume. Pigs are good at eating. As Miss Piggy says, never eat anything you can't lift. One of the great quotes. Demons, psychological dislocation, also consume. In our story, they consume the man. And the Romans, the first century oppressor variety, also consumed. They stole from the peasantry, dispossessing them of their land and dislocating them from their community. The Romans ate at the heart, the self-belief of the people. In our story, the consumption is total. Physically, mentally, and spiritually, the community was in chains, and so was God. So the saga of the Gerasene demoniac is far removed from the quick fix, individualized, Benny Hinn miracle cure that enables the supposedly insane to re-enter the ranks of supposedly sane society. Instead, this is a symbolic story about being consumed, being colonized, not only in your land, but also in your mind and theology. The demoniac is symbolically both a prisoner and mentally ill, externally and internally fettered. The exorcism, the duel with demons so beloved of Hollywood, is about a struggle for the heart. Consider for a moment Butch and Sundance, my heroes. Not from Hollywood, but from the heartlands of England. Two pigs who sparked a nationwide hunt in 1998 when they escaped from the abattoir at the last possible moment. They ducked under a fence, swam across a river, and dashed across a field in their bid for freedom. For several days, they inspired a nation with their zeal and ingenuity. We all long to be free from that which restricts and oppresses us, be it an invading army, mental illness, or an abattoir's end. Retired now at a friendly farm, Butch and Sundance have been forever immortalized in stone on the exterior of Hereford Cathedral. The message of hope in our story is that healing happens when individuals and communities and God are liberated from the shackles of consumption. Jesus was confronting the powers, creating physical and spiritual space so that life, healing, and hope were possible. Freedom was both external and internal. The appetite of our Western world is pervasive. We are the Romans of the 21st century, controlling and consuming most of the world's resources. Our appetite not only enslaves others, it enslaves us, and it fetters God. More and more we seem to be consumed by ourselves as a culture and what we require. We believe we've earned our economic power and that this is in the best interests of all. We believe that countries in poverty are being mismanaged or are not bright or as able as us. Yet despite these pervasive dogmas, our hearts tell us differently. We aren't wholly convinced. In our supposed freedom, why do we still hear the rattle of chains? We know that there's a societal sickness, a dementia, and we look even to pigs for inspiration.